It's Christmas time again. You've made it through yet another nuclear winter year. They said you wouldn't make it through two, and yet here you are. But forget the oppressive truth that you're very likely the last person alive on Earth, and pretend to celebrate the season with Jonathan's Post-Apocalyptic Christmas Carols, Volume 3. That's right, just when you thought there wouldn't be another volume, Jonathan's Post-Apocalyptic Christmas Carols brings you all new ways to ring in the nuclear Yuletide cheer, with hits like, It's the Most Horrible Time to Have Fear. It's the most horrible time to have fear. The sirens just went off and the bombs will soon fall, but we're frozen right here. It's the most horrible time to have fear. Instead of find shelter, we all just froze up and started freaking out right where we sat. Mom started screaming and Bill started peeing and Grandma just flipped off my dad. That was weird. While other people, if they were still alive, would be staring outside the window into the radiation snow outside, your mind will be far away with songs of the Christmas season. Skynet declared war, they say, on Judgment Day, on Judgment Day. Humanity nearly wiped away on Judgment Day without warning. It hunts us down relentlessly, Terminator killing machines. The new ones look like you and me, except the dogs start barking. I told you, make sure you pack food down in the bunker. We need to pack food. Just one job, that's all you had to do. And now the end's here. The bombs finally fall. And what have we here? Two boxes of Triscuits and a case of light beer. Now get up there and go and find food. Don't care if radiation kills you. If you don't go, that's what I'll do. So get your butt up there. My assault rifle goes prum 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 prum. Told those raiders to leave my yard, but more of them come. Took the three who came through the gate. Prum, 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 prum. Oh, look, they brought more friends. Prum, 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 prum. North corner, prum, prum. There's two more, prum, prum. It said you get further in life with kind words and a gun. That's the reason I won. With these new songs, you can temporarily stop thinking about the bleakness of humanity or the fact that you technically shouldn't have even lived this long. With songs like, Here We Come Assaulting, All I Want for Christmas is My Two Neighbors to Eat, Ding Dong Please Let Me Get High, and many more. But no Christmas album would be complete without a Yuletide classic from The Chipmunks. Okay, you guys ready to sing a post-apocalyptic Christmas song?
Oh, say we are. This bunker smells like feet.
Well, yeah, it's an underground bunker.
This place isn't near as nice as the vault, you know.
Yeah, well, why don't you just shut your mouth and just sing, Alvin? Alvin? Alvin!
Okay, Jonathan.
Nuclear Armageddon's here. No more cars and no more beer. Life was good, but that's all past. Burning an atomic blast. Too bad we didn't pack more food. Now we may have to eat that dude.
What?
Not sure we can stand the taste, but that's life in the waste.
Oh, you think you guys are gonna eat me? Guess what my favorite food in Fallout 3 was? Squirrel on a stick!
Oh my god, you killed Alvin!
Here you go, eat him. It's only cannibalism if you're not in denial.
Ew!
So order Jonathan's Post-Apocalyptic Christmas Carols Volume 3. After all, there's a pretty good possibility that you won't live to see the fourth one. order today. Limit one album per person, or however many were manufactured before the generator ran out. This offer not available in martial law control districts, in places where radiation can cook hamburgers on a car hood, or for people who are fans of New Kids on the Block.
Welcome back to this 59th episode of Through the Aftermath. I am your host, Sean, and with me once again is Jonathan. How you doing, Jonathan?
Woohoo!
I mean, I can't believe we're recording again already, especially considering the fact that Fallout 4 is out. But
I know.
I mean, how many times have you beat it? How many times have you beat it now?
Yeah, that's a terrible question. I don't even know where to go from here. It's like, yeah. It's funny you mentioned that, because I was telling Sean this. I actually had beaten Fallout 4, one of the factions. I'm actually forcing myself to go back to, like, wait a little bit, you know, wait for some, you know, some more content to come through, and then go back and play it again with another faction. But and we'll touch on that momentarily here. But yeah, it is. It's been a breath of fresh air to finally, you know, have something that is just like you fun to immerse yourself in and finally be able to be tangible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so that's pretty much why we wanted to record this. So, you know, we're going to talk all about Fallout 4, which, I mean, you're probably talking, you know, saying to yourself right now, isn't every episode about Fallout 4?
But, yeah, no kidding. But yeah, I know somebody out there is like, oh, we predicted this one coming.
Yeah. It's like, what took them so long, right? Yeah, well,
exactly.
There's just so much to talk about. So we're not going to, we're kind of planning this a little bit of a battle plan here. We don't want to do spoilers, although, you know, a little bit, especially the beginning stuff is going to be, inevitable. But, you know, the ending, we don't want to spoil any of that kind of stuff. I don't even know the ending.
We're not going to blow the story.
Yeah, me. I haven't beat the game yet, but Jonathan has. So I don't know, you know, what's in store. So I won't be able to even provide those kind of spoilers.
Although I will dispel a rumor, and we'll get to that. There's actually a funny rumor that went viral that people were like, I don't want to play this game because the ending sounds, somebody spoiled it and it's terrible. And I looked at the ending and went, you're kidding, right? So, yeah. I wonder how many people out there have actually run into this. We'll see.
See, my approach to this is I didn't read a lot about it. I didn't try to, you know, read up on it before. I'm going to say, like, I do that with Star Wars. I'm not going to read up on Star Wars and watch all the interviews and everything, because I just want to watch it. So I'm kind of like that with Fallout. You know, I knew a little bit about it, of course, and I like the fact that I knew it was going to be in Boston and, you know, and things like that. But, from there, you know, I didn't want to read the stuff where people were disappointed in it, because I didn't want that to taint me at all, you know.
Right.
Right. Off the bat. So.
And that's wise.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that we, you know, we're going to talk about the quote unquote, I'm making air quotes right here, the negativity and the kind of the perception that a lot of people have had from it so far.
Right.
And also we want to talk about some of the things, like Jonathan says he wants to talk about the things that he wishes he knew, you know, the first time, the first playthrough.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be all Fallout 4. And we're gonna have fun with this, right?
Yeah, it should be fun. We're kind of, you know, and we're shooting from the hip, because I mean, the thing about Fallout 4 is it's just immense, and you know, we don't want to bore you with details and go, remember that time? You know, it won't be that weird, but, although I can't guarantee that somewhere in that we're gonna be like, hey, remember that time? But, you know, we wanted to kind of make it more interesting rather than just sit there and go, it's so good. You know, we wanted to touch on things specifically that dispel a few rumors of what people's perceptions were, maybe reinforce a few, and then maybe talk about even a few things of what we predict the DLC could even be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
That'll be fun.
I have a question. The only question that matters. Would you risk your life for your fellow man? even if that man is a synth.
Beneath the Commonwealth, there is a cancer known as the Institute. A malignant growth that needs to be cut before it infects the surface.
So where is it, huh? This Institute. How do I get there?
Haven't you been paying attention? You don't find the Institute. The Institute finds you.
Let's go, boy.
Now, you have beat the game. Are you in a second playthrough, or?
Right now? I'm actually, now this should say something here. I am still playing my first playthrough with meaning to go back and play the second playthrough. It's funny because those of you who've played the game, I mean, one thing you learn really quick, and those of you who haven't, this is, like I said, this isn't a spoiler. One thing you're going to learn really quick is, just as we hoped, the central character of this entire game, even though there's a story, like most Bethesda games, the story is sort of the, you know, on the back burner of the fact that the world itself is the game. And this game has taken that to a much, much greater level. Love the story, hate the story or not. I actually haven't talked to anybody who beat it, who hated it. But the fact is, it's the world and the immersion of it, and the fact that you're able to walk around these gigantic, immense locations. And it's funny because everybody, I remember in the beginning when people were talking about, oh, I compare it to Skyrim's map. It's like way smaller. But then you play this and you're like, holy crap, man. I walked down a street and like five things popped up. And what's crazy is I've been in locations where I've gone back to areas I thought were empty and found something else. And I remember, you remember that in Fallout 3.
Oh, yeah.
You'd go back and you'd be like, oh, there's something else there. This game is riddled with secrets. I mean, rooftops, places where I've been 1,000 times and went, I didn't know something was up there. You know, I mean, it's just amazing how crafted the world really is and how just different the world is with itself. I mean, it's like one side versus the other, and just the art direction is, they took the art direction to a way deeper level, and I think that's what really clicked it for me. Because I'll just tell this straight up, when I went into this game, because people are going to be like, you know, we expect John was going to like it because John's a Fallout fanboy, and to which I would reply, fan man, please. Merman dad. I went into this, I'll be honest, I was extreme. I can be the worst critic when it comes to this. If they had not done this correctly, I would have been the first to call BS. And having worked on the mod, the one bummer about working on the mod is you start to get the ins and outs of knowing how things are working under the hood. So you tend to see glitches for what they probably really are, rather than, oh, it's a glitch. You know why it's probably a glitch. And so I might have been overly critical there. But what took me off guard was that the world, I mean, all along they've been, the beauty of Fallout has been the fact that it's a post-apocalyptic, you know, really, it's our show and I can't say that yet. Are we kidding? The post-apocalyptic 1950s.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the world of 50s in the future, and that's what makes it so wonderful, and that's why so many of us love it. It's just everything that's wonderful about the 50s brought up to that space age level, and what they've been able to do in this is crank it to where a lot of the art direction that they had been wanting to do and couldn't because of limitations, they were able to just go insane with. And so what you have are all these overly dramatic buildings that are just ridiculous looking, and two-story freeways that are just towering and covered with, you know, billboards everywhere, because, you know, in the 50s, everything was commercialized almost to the point of being insane, and they would have continued doing that. And so everywhere you go, you've got billboards and cars, and, you know, in Fallout 3, you had, what, 3 cars you saw? 10, you know, and this one, they made, like, over 50 cars.
Yeah.
And they have different types of cars. And for me, when I went into this, that was my main thing, is I was excited to see, okay, finally they're going to take the art direction to a new level, even to the point where they actually just released the book, the art of Fallout 3, which is like 400 pages of the art. And I hooked up, that's my Christmas present, woohoo! But I'm so fascinated with that whole, you know, art deco thing that they do with the metal and everything just looking so ridiculous that you can tell that they just had a riot with this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not only the art direction of, you know, duck and cover, and everyone's scared of, you know, the end of the world happening. So, you know, that's when the world ended. So it's kind of like an alternate history thing. That's the premise of the Fallout universe. And so everything stops there. So you have all this old, you know, all the scrap and everything is all old, fantasy 50s cars, and not real 50s. You know, there's not like a 57 Bel Air out there. It's like a, you know, when you watch, I forgot what cartoon that was. There was some cartoon that was in the 80s where they would show, old, like, fantasy 50s, cars. It was like a car show for, it was a cartoon, I don't know. But anyway.
I thought you were talking about the Jetsons. I was no, like, oh yeah, that one.
Well, no, it was a different one. It was something, I think it was like Bugs Bunny, but it was like an offshoot, I don't know. Anyway. But anyway, they had these like bubble top, you know, giant fins, all this stuff, and that's kind of
on Mars, wasn't it? The Martian guy, he would get in the cars, and they maybe that was it. Yeah, I got a glimpse in my mind of what you're probably talking.
Yeah,
about.
But anyway, so they had these, you know, big bubble tops and the big fins and the giant round headlights and taillights and everything, things that were kind of fantasized about in the 50s, and they never actually, you know, went past the prototype stage. Well, it's like, what if that really happened and then the world ended and it froze all that in time, you know? So you have all that, which, you know, Fallout fans are hearing me talk about this and they're like, duh, you know, that's, we already knew that. But for anyone who doesn't know, you know, that's kind of the premise of it. And I guess to catch people up too, you know, we've talked about Wasteland, which was the, you know, the originator of all of this, in 87. 88, and then, you know, the Fallout 1, 2, which were completely different, three-quarter top view, you know, games, but they had that same, they were kind of bringing Wasteland into this 50s, you know, Art Deco style, and then Fallout 3 is, you know, the first-person shooter, Bethesda, all this stuff, so this is kind of a continuation for that. And that's a really quick, you know, bringing you up to speed.
Right.
But what gets me about this is, you know, it's always been kind of this progression that's been great. You know, you change the view in Fallout 3, then you get Fallout New Vegas, which is pretty much Fallout 3.5. You know, it's the same, it's the same thing, but in a different location. And it was always great. And it was something that Bethesda kind of was really good at, was taking this engine and adding new art to it, and then, you know, making a lot of money off of it. But then they made Skyrim, which, you know, it kind of revolutionized that engine from, you know, the Oblivion and the Fallout 3. So then people kind of figured out, well, they're probably going to do this with the Fallout universe too, because I don't know which one's bigger. Would you say the Fallout universe is bigger for Bethesda than Elder Scrolls?
You know, it's a tough one, because I will tell you that there's Elder Scrolls out there. I mean, there is an Elder Scrolls Online that it warranted its own online game. But I will tell you that the thing about the Fallout universe is that it has withstood time, and you've got such a diverse, you know, group following that one too. It has, I think that if anything, the amount of sales, and geez, what they sell, 13 million in the first 24 hours or first week or something like that alone proved that the world had joined up with it. And it's like, okay, well, if it wasn't their biggest now, it is now.
Yeah.
Like, everybody bought that game. It was insane.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised. I have like high school friends on Facebook who I didn't even know knew anything except Minecraft. And now they're like, oh, I got to get this Fallout 4 game. And I'm like, wait a minute. Let me talk to you about this Fallout 4. But, you know, it's like, you kind of feel like, it's like your baby has grown up and is going to college now. And, you know, cause it's like, this is our, you know, we're the post-apocalyptic gaming geeks. You know, that's us. So this was our kind of, you know, whatever you call that, you know, our ideal game. And it's getting so big now, and this is kind of where I'm going with this, is it's getting so big now that everybody's playing it. Everyone's getting into the post-apocalyptic. They're loving the, you know, the references, the everything about it, you know, scrapping together weapons and things like that. So I'm really, I mean, from my perspective, I've avoided a lot of the negativity, the negative reviews, and I say a lot. There's not a lot out there, but there are some, And I've kind of just gone to it as a post-apocalyptic fan, as a Fallout fan, as a gamer, as someone who loves art, you know, just those kind of, all those things together and someone who loves, you know, the 50s and loves that whole line back from Wasteland all the way up to here. So it's a lot of things coming together for me, which I understand kind of taints my view, you know, makes me a fanboy. and I'll admit that, but I love this game and I haven't played too much of it. I was telling Jonathan, I'm level 16 now. I did get the game a little late. I got it on Black Friday. I waited for the, I didn't have an Xbox One before. So I was waiting to get an Xbox One for Black Friday, and then they had the Fallout bundle.
Oh.
So I got it all together. It was a really great deal. So I waited for that, and I got it. So I've only been playing it for, 3 weeks now? 2.5 mm-hmm. weeks? So I'm about level 16, and I'm, you know, getting into it. But from what I can tell, and this is kind of directed toward the people who are maybe waiting to play it still, the one or two of you out there. it's an amazing game. As a Fallout fan, it's an amazing game as a post-apocalyptic fan, you know, it's an amazing game as a gamer, but it goes so much further beyond that, I think, because you have things in there that surprised the heck out of me, like settlements. I knew that there were going to be settlements, but I had no idea how amazing settlements are going to be, and mm-hmm. I'm spending so much of my time, you know, I'm developing my character just to build settlements. You know, I'm building up the science and the gun nut and the different skills like that, which are new, that help you build your settlements. And these settlements, just really quickly, are basically, you know, it's part of a storyline at first where you get, you kind of help out these people and you clear out an area of whatever creatures are there. So then you have a little settlement and you can, invite people. You get more people in there. And it's kind of like, if anyone's played State of Decay, you ever play State of Decay?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I found it very similar to State of Decay.
It is very much.
Yeah, you build up a little settlement, you build up the people, you build up the resources around it, you can add power to it, you know, you can make generators, you can make you can make switches and like power poles, and it's amazing all the different things you can do. You can make terminals, you can make, turrets, traps. That's just the power stuff. You can make these great structures. If you've never seen those videos, there's some videos that came out actually before the game launched that showed off a little bit of the settlements, what you could build. And, people are making some amazing things out of this, which is very inspirational to me. But for me, I'm spending so much time just building these settlements, powering them up, getting lights, making the people happy, getting them better armor, you know, better weapons, making them self-sufficient, and then going on to the next settlement doing the same thing. And that's a lot of fun. Like I've never really gone into a Fallout, well, of course I've never gone into a Fallout game wanting to build settlements, but I've never gone into it not wanting to do the storyline first. You know, mm-hmm. because I'm like, I'm going to beat the storyline, then I'm going to go back, do all the side quests, then I'm going to blow up this city and kill everyone in this city and see what happens. And, you know, that's how you play Fallout, right? Or any Bethesda game. And, but this one, it's like, I just want to get these settlements, but it's like a sandbox. It's like my own little, you know, sandbox game and then if I want to, I can go play the storyline and do some linear
stuff.
Exactly. I mean, it's amazing.
And that's why those games are fun. I mean, those, yeah. You know. You always make the houses modding community. It's the housing that gets blown out of
yeah.
the water, you know?
Yeah, it's like that in so many games. I mean, that to me was always a big part of MMOs, you know, was the housing. And, right. But in MMOs, you can show it to your friends, you know, you can show it off, which is a big difference. But I don't know. I just feel like maybe that's what it is. It's like a part of the MMO part of me, you know, is really enjoying the settlement part and I don't know. It's just, I feel like there's so much I could just explain, you know, why I love this game, but I just had to say that about the settlements because that,
yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. The settlements, I mean, you're being told in all these games that you're trying to make the Wasteland a better place. You're changing people's lives. Well, now you have this hands-on reason yeah. for why it's happening and it's integral to the story. And that's what's interesting is what took me off guard was that the story's there, but for the first time, I didn't feel like the story was driving me. Like it wasn't, I was literally, I mean, how many of us who've played this, and we can all probably say we've done this, how many of you guys went off to go do the quest you were aiming for And the four or five times from that time forward you ended up playing, you ended up getting sidetracked by something you found.
Oh, yeah.
Fallout 3, we did that, but I remember still the storyline being prominent. What strikes me weird about this game, and this kind of hails back to what you said about the watching your baby grow up, so to speak. I mean, we all know, you know, we all know that story of Fallout, the fact that, you know, in the 50s it diverged into its own world, that the world was it, where our world became, you know, transistor based, and we created computers, and our power consumption went way down. Theirs exploded. Commercialism went insane to the point where they were burning up fossil fuels like no tomorrow. And even despite, you know, fusion power, it just wasn't enough. And we ended up going, they had a global war because of it. By the year 2077, we all blow each other up. Hmm. Well, what's interesting is the minute I saw the intro, I swear to God, like I almost choked up because it was almost like seeing this story that you've played in your mind, that you've been seeing in slideshow form, being played out in like live action. And those of you who haven't played it, the intro isn't your slideshow. It's very live action style, but there's this almost a cinematic feel to it. And the thing is that linked this game for me was the music. Like Enon Zur, the guy's amazing. But he went bonkers with the music on this one. He instead of like 10 tracks, he did like 70 of them. And yeah, they're themed a certain way, and they have this underlying feel to them depending where you're at. And what's interesting, and tell me you didn't notice this, like in previous Fallout games, what you had was a humorous, dark humor, post-apocalyptic game with a sense of sadness underneath it. That you'd find, like those moments where you'd be wandering around and everything was like almost goofballish, but then you'd find the camp in Fallout 3 where the Red Cross lady had the journal saying that she was watching people die after bombs fell and stuff like that. This game flip-flopped it. Now you have the underlying sense of sadness from the get-go with the humor underneath it. And so right from the music, from the experiences you have, because the fact that this guy you play is pre-war, and you get to watch things play out from the world that he had, and then within an hour you're seeing the world that a minute ago you saw pristine being just torn apart, and it's even not only affecting him but his own robot butler is having withdrawals from the, you know, what happened, you know, and just the interaction and the sadness of from the get-go of what's happening. But the music just has this haunting feel to it. I mean, it's got, he went crazy with like a lot of the just ambient music where before you just sort of had that like Fallout style kind of tone that would be playing with music and sound effects, and this one is more of like a cinematic sad feel to it. It's funny that you can actually almost kind of, you almost feel for the guy, like you find yourself like emotionally vested. Let's be honest, when you played Fallout 3, when your dad left the vault, were you like, my God, I'm going to find out what happened? It was cool, but you weren't like, oh my God. Yeah. But in this one, when you find out what you're supposed to do, you almost feel this like pull, because a minute ago you were pre-war and you were going, what just happened to my world? My whole family just got changed up and everything's different, and I have to find out what I'm going to do in the midst of this. And you feel this like link to it.
Yeah. I totally agree. I mean, even going back to the other Fallout games, you know, it's like, oh, I have to find a water chip. I'll find it eventually. You know, I'm going to do some other stuff first. And it's like, you know, but in this one, it's like, I don't know. I'm not going to spoil it, but, you know, I have to do this. I have to do this thing because this is what, you know, like you said, it's an emotional connection. And I think they did do it really, really well, the way everything, you know, kind of came out.
Well, and they did what they did well with this one versus Fallout 3, and I'm sure it was just due to limitation in the previous games, was they're able to portray much more with this one, because where before, you know, obviously you'd find the terminals and you'd learn about things kind of from people who'd, you know, from the dead, basically. You'd be getting these stories in holotapes. Well, it's almost like they were able this time to just go bonkers and give you as much as they could that was pre-war. You know, you'd find buildings where you're finding the day that the bombs fell from the point of view of like so many different characters, including high level government people, you know, a runaway girl. I mean, just these moments that impacted them and how some of them had to move on, you know, right down to people that you interact with in the intro who you know, you end up crossing paths. You may or may not cross paths with it later. But it's what's amazing about it was it's just the sheer sense of sadness and loss to the world that we had. That hey, look, we got so wrapped up in what we had that we blew each other up for it. You know?
Yeah.
It's just tragic.
Yeah. I think though, like you said, you know, the humor really does. It's kind of spotted in there.
Yeah.
Just enough to keep it so you're not depressed while you're playing.
Exactly. It's enough to make you like, I'm going to listen to The Cure and cry a lot. I mean, it's like you really do. You when it's there at the right moment. Yeah. And my God, there are some points in it where you just bust out laughing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not including the bugs, mind you. The bugs are the rest of the time you start laughing. But,
yeah. I haven't, but, you know, I haven't really had too many bugs. You know, we were talking about this before we started recording, that a lot of people are complaining about the glitches and the bugs. And it's like, well, first of all, these are in all the games. Like you said, you know, it's, especially the graphic glitches. You know, this is something that, for some reason, you know, is in Bethesda games, you know, but it's almost like a, just a funny thing.
It is. It's a staple.
Yeah, a staple. That's the word I was thinking of. Yeah. It's a staple of these games. And I haven't come across any that are I've had a couple game breaking ones that I've had to well not game breaking but the quest wouldn't continue and I just went to a previous save game and then it fixed it, you know.
That's the worst that's happened to me.
Yeah.
I haven't had any crashes, which I cannot say that about Fallout 3 or Fallout New Vegas. I would crash.
Yeah,
and this is even without mods in it, you know.
Yeah.
And it seems like the bugs that I've had have, you know, the only bugs I've had that I'm joking around about them being bugs are the moment of, you know, God bless, you know, Bethesda's physics engine, because when crap goes haywire and the guy goes flying off into the distance, you can't help but laugh.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, you know, it's like the moments you weren't expecting where the guy's stuck halfway in the ground and starts going off of the wall or something. But if that's the worst, you know, people were ripping it apart about these bugs and the graphics look terrible. And I'm like, guys, wake up. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to notice things in every game you play. Go back and play like the top games you've ever seen that look amazing. Get up close. You're going to see polygons. I'm sorry, but that's just how it works. But then you complain like that the game runs too slow and it's like, what do you want?
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, I do find it funny, those glitches where something in the background is just brrr, and like there's a cutscene, you know, kind of a thing, and your companion wants to talk to you, but there's this noise that's so loud, and you're like, I can't hear what you're saying. What are you saying? So you have So you have to go back and
you almost have to go back and play it again, or something happens that's perfectly timed. Like one of the things that me and my kids do constantly is like, I don't know if you've seen this. Like Kotaku has the highlight reel that they come out with a couple times a week.
Yeah.
What it is? Yeah, it's basically the glitches and goof ups and funny things that people have done.
Yeah.
Well, some of them have been like the last couple of them have been just nonstop Fallout 4 ones, and some of them are so funny. Like having the synth lady go, you know, I'm human, you gotta believe me, and right when she says it, her eyes vanish, and you're just dying with laughter because it couldn't have been better time.
Yeah.
I mean, just stuff like that. I love that stuff, though. I still have fond memories in Fallout 3 of sitting there walking down the path and you hear this scream going over top of your head and you look up and there's some Brotherhood Steel guy, arms flayed out, careening into the distance from God knows where.
Yeah.
And you're like, where the hell did he just come from? And you go running over and there he is. He's dead. He's on the ground. It's like, where did that happen?
Yeah.
And you have no idea.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Well, what, I mean, it's obvious we love this game, right?
Yeah.
What don't we like?
You know, the only things that I've found myself not so, it's not so much that I don't like it, it's that I was a little bit scratching my head because we're fans of the game, we have the background, and yet the learning curve in this game is insane in places. When there are things that happen out the gate that no one is clarifying. And I thought I would touch on a few of them. One of the things that we'll call this the what I wish I knew at the beginning segment. One of the things that I didn't and here's the funny thing, Kay. I bought the guide. I wasn't going to do it because I'm not a person who goes, I'm going to go look at where the stuff's hidden. What I was doing, I found myself buying the guide because I was hoping it was going to be a better manual.
Yeah.
Because things in the game weren't clarified very well. You'd get bits and pieces. Okay. Perfect example. Caravans. Okay, so if I get the perk, you know, the level 2 perk with, you know, with money, then I get to have caravans, which means that you can have caravans to and from places. Well, what does that mean? What does that actually mean to me? And it wasn't until later that I realized, oh, caravans means if you link them between two locations, they will share the junk in the workbenches.
Which is very important.
Yeah, very important. It doesn't share anything else, mind you. But what it does share is not only the junk in the workbenches, but if one place is a food provider and one place can't provide for food, it will offset them. And no one tells you this. All you notice is that the number in red, which is the food that they're dying, that they don't have, and all of a sudden it goes green, but it still shows zero, and you're going, wait, what just happened? But no one's telling you this. Yeah. Things like that. And then the other one was, too, is, you know, I was with the – there was such a different change with this new perk chart. And I've heard people badmouth the perk chart. I don't have a problem with it. I think it's still fun.
Yeah.
Other than the noise that it makes. Bleep, bleep, bleep. You know, I was like, okay, that's enough of that. But the idea – what I didn't realize is we play so many games where there's a progression and you jump down the perk chart that I didn't realize partway through that you could actually jump – down further than you had so far.
Yeah.
As long as your stat matched up with whatever perk it was. And so here I was trying to grab perks I didn't want because I was aiming for one further down going, oh, I could have just gotten it.
See, I had almost the same experience, except I wasn't getting perks down the line. I mm-hmm. thought that you had to max out an attribute in order to unlock perks. So I'm maxing out agility. Because I thought the only way I can get any perks was to max it out. So I'm maxing it out and everything. And then I look down and I'm looking at the – I'm like, I'm going to look at some of the perks, you know, what's down here. And I'm looking and I notice some of them are colored in and some of them are grayed. And I'm like, wait a minute. No. And so I'm like, I didn't have to max out agility. But it's mm-hmm. good because I got the best agility perk, you know, because I had it open. But yeah. I think that you're absolutely right. We both made mistakes on that chart in different ways because it wasn't really explained. Yeah.
And it's things like that are shocking, especially with settlements. Settlements is such a new thing and there's so much under the hood that it doesn't tell you. I mean, you're able to kind of piece it together because you're like, okay, if I do this, I need wires to do it. Oh, okay. But it's missing this much power. Okay. This generator does this much power. It must work, but nobody's telling you under the hood, what is causing happiness with these people? Cause, whenever I've heard about one of the achievements is you get a place to 100 happiness. Well, the funny thing is all of the information that we get that's supposed to lead to this from people who've done it, it conflicts with each other. One, I've heard things where they say, well, you've got to keep the noise pollution down. And I'm like, you're telling me there's noise pollution. And then you try it and it doesn't work. And you're going, wait a minute. What? Well, then somebody else is like, well, when you leave, it glitches. And I'm like, okay. Okay, and so what's making things happy? What's making them sad? And who the freak didn't who forgot to tell me that when you start plopping things down in a settlement, there's a limit.
Oh yeah,
I didn't notice that at first. And what it is a glorified way to keep the memory and everything in the graphics from being out of control.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you've got places where what is there like 30 something settlements of all different varying terrains and challenges. Yeah. And what I hate is when they give you a gigantic area, but they don't give you enough in there to really do much with it. And you're going, wait, that's as much as I can plop down on the ground. You know, that seems like that's got to be tweaked a little bit, but
yeah, I found that out because they were talking about when you want to protect your settlements, you build walls. So I'm building walls all the way around mm-hmm. the entire, and then I'm like, wait, oh, I hit the limit. I can't, what? You know?
Yeah. How am I hitting a limit here?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then another thing they don't tell you is that you can break things down. I mean, you assume that somebody would just know that, but they don't always have that, you know, and it's the fact that once I realized that these things I was selling, like pipe guns and everything, you start to get the hang of, wait a minute, if I break this down, it becomes this and this and this. Oh, and this becomes it. Oh, okay. And so you start breaking things down constantly. And what's funny is, you know, me and, my buddy Rob, you know, one thing we're laughing about is it almost did away with the whole point of having the junk jet, you know, the whole rocket launcher thing that fired garbage, because all I see when I fire garbage is money.
Yeah.
You know, I like settlement stuff is fine, you know, and it's like, except for teddy bears, that's always fun. But, I mean, that's the thing is it's like there's just all these little elements like that they're, no one's explaining to you. Like one thing that I didn't pick up on until partway through is that your settlers, you can not only drop stuff in their inventory, but you can force them to wear certain things. And so you started to see this evolution because everybody says settler at their name. Mm-hmm. You started to see people going, well, if I'm going to make him be the farmer, I'm going to give him the farming clothes because that's the only way I can tell.
Yeah, yeah.
And stuff like that. And then, you know, caravan people, you almost have to dress them a certain way to kind of keep track because no one's really there's no way to really keep track of where the settlers are doing, where they're at. You know, it says you have 20 people. You only can see 15. Where are the other five? I don't know.
Yeah.
It would be nice to have that screen like in Fallout Shelter where it tells you a list of where everybody is and what they're doing. And it's like, where was that?
You know? And that's especially frustrating when you want to find a companion. Like you sent him to, you know, a certain settlement and then you're like, where is he? And you have to go looking through each house, you know, yelling his name.
Yeah. You're like, you're literally running around like going, where is he at? Is he here? Nope. Yeah. Nope. What is he here? Nope. Yeah. And you know, it's almost embarrassing at times because, I mean, it took me a minute to realize that the blinking helmet on the map was where I had parked my power armor and not Darth Vader head. Showed up at the settlement at that moment to invade. I don't know. And that's the thing is there wasn't even like really a, like a map legend, so to speak. It was almost like, wait, it's throwing info at me, but I really have no idea. Like I was halfway through before I realized you could turn on caravan routes. You know, you can actually go onto the map and push caravan route and it'll show you where it'll show you the settlements, drawing arrows to each other where they're linking. And, but yet, you know, after a while of that, you're even going, wait, who's who again? You know, because if you go back and you wonder, you like change it, you got to go track down where the guy went, and then you're like, wait, who is that guy? You know?
Yeah, yeah. And another thing is, it kind of coinciding with that is when you get a new companion, and your old companion, you don't really get a chance to take his stuff back yet.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, wait, he's got my fat man, and he's got all this great stuff, and. Okay, I'll go ahead and send him back to the settlement, and then I got to go back to the settlement, and then find which house he's in, and you know, get all my stuff back.
And it makes for some funny things because one of the funniest moments I had, the funniest did that just happen moment for me was I was sitting there, you know, and Valentine. Have you met Valentine?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so Valentine's one of my companions. I'm sitting there. I get out of my power armor because, you know, annoyance, you know, you have to get out of power armor to use the workbench. I guess that makes sense. But so I'm getting out of my power armor, and all of a sudden I hear my power armor power up and kick on, and I turn, and that fracker's in my power armor. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And he's trying to talk to me with his voice, and I hear this, and I'm like, you freaking stole my power armor. And,
you're like,
and from what I could
you're
tell,
using
there was
my
no
fusion.
Way. Yeah, like, you're burning up my cores, dude. And I'm like, get out of there. It's like, you're my cell phone, you stole my cell phone. But like, I can't get him to get out of it. And even if I tell him to take it off, or it won't work. And I'm thinking, okay, somebody did not foresee this moment.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it makes for funny stuff because you can do that to other people. One of the funniest things is when you, you know, sneak up behind an enemy and pull his core out. And then he just kicks open his armor and goes, whoa, what just happened? And then you kill him. or you shoot him in the power, you know, in the core, if you're lucky, you know?
Yeah.
That makes for funny things, but God, when Valentine stole my armor, I'm like, dude, that's it, dude. You're grounded. And I made him go home. And then that was the end of that. But, I think I know a lot of people have kind of barked about that was not a dog meat joke, by the way. have barked about the fact that the conversation system is a little bit different. Mm. I personally haven't had too much of a problem with it other than the fact that one time I was trying to like, you know, those charisma things you have that'll pop up in yellow that if you have high charisma, you can do these charisma checks. Well, one of them I'd done and I'd messed it up and I went back and reloaded and I was kind of fast pushing buttons through the dialogue choices because I knew where I was aiming for. And in the process, I hit one too many. And after I was done, immediately pulled my shotgun out and blew the guy's head off. My son thought that was the funniest thing he'd ever seen in his entire life. I felt so bad because let's just say it was a main character. When I realized what I had just done, I thought, I think I'm going to go to hell for that. But it's I didn't have a problem with the dialogue. It is annoying though with dog meat. It's sometimes, you know, the little arrow telling you where to go, dog meat will kind of follow you and get in your way. And I was just kind of like, oh, they got to tweak that just a bit. That's a little bit too out of control. But
that is my number one beef right there. Is I want to say companions, get out of the way. Like just get out of the way. Like
get out of the way.
You're sneaking. You know, and you're sneaking into an area, and you know that right around the corner is what you have to shoot at. So you're getting ready, you got your scope ready, and this companion just walks right in front of you. And you're like, just move. Or like you turn on VATS, and you start shooting at him, and he walks right in the way.
He gets right in the way as you're shooting.
And you're like, just get out of the way. Yeah.
It always goes back to that. You know, I mean, it's almost like somebody threw that in there for old time's sake or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's funny too because I had this one sequence where I was in an area that was heavily trapped, and I was thinking, and it was I don't know if you've seen this. One of the things, and this is kind of a cool thing I can touch on that I really do appreciate about the game in Fallout 3, when you found a location, it primarily unlocked on your map and you had all these things you could go back and look at. This game is riddled with areas that are unmarked on purpose that you may or may never see. And some of them are hidden so well that you're almost like I've heard it said on more than one article where people are saying you almost shouldn't even fast travel if you can help it, because the things you're going to run into that you would never have seen otherwise, and it's heavy. I mean, there's, I don't know, I'll throw you a bone here. Like, there's one area that we like to call, we've been calling it like the Riddler's Tunnel. And it almost looks like something out of Arkham Knight. And it's this underground parking structure where some guy out of Saw has been like setting up these traps to like lure you in. He's been killing people and you just happen to stumble onto it. There's no marker telling you it's there. You just find it. And it's these sort of unsung hero moments that you're going, oh my gosh, this is crazy. Somebody put some time into this. It's not even on the map. But so we were in this area and I'm sitting there. I walk around this corner and they do these kind of scare tactics with you with very simple things. And one of them is you might turn around the corner and there might be mannequins just standing there. And you're like, ugh, you know, and the music jumps and you're, whoa, you know. And so I'm sitting there going, okay, this place might be trapped. Let's not touch the mannequins. I'm going around them. And I turn, and right when I turn, Codsworth starts slamming into one of them at a time, and I kid you not, he goes across, starts nailing this side, turns around, starts nailing the other side. I had to record it. It was so funny. And you could see me going, like, you could just see me, like, you could tell that I'm, like, pausing as I watch him, like, what are you doing? And then he's like, and it was so funny, because when he turned, his you know, they rattle off the random words, he'll just go, sorry, sir. And I'm just like, what? Are you crazy?
That's almost, it's almost in character with a 50s comedy, you know?
It is. It was like the wacky moment where something crazy happened. Like, well, you get back here. Sorry, yeah. Boss. You know, I mean, it was like right out of that.
Yeah,
and then the other glitch that I think is hilarious that I haven't seen, but I want to, is, have you seen the glitch where Valentine is tipped backwards and when he walks, he kicks his feet up?
No.
It's so damn funny. It's seriously the first thing you'll see when you think this is the frog on Bugs Bunny going, hello, yeah, my baby. Hello, my hon. I mean, it was exactly what it looked like. And for a split second, I'm like, someone did that. But no, apparently it's a glitch. But that's what makes for some of the funniest stuff, because for one thing that took me off guard is, remember the random events in Fallout 3? I remember a few of them happening, and they were usually sparse, like you might have the guy who had the collar and he's begging you to get it off before it blows his head off,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
In this one, there are no not only random events, there's random events on the road, there's random events that are on in certain locations, there's random events for certain scripted characters. Even to the point where you might run into certain guys, but only if you're going down certain roads at the time,
yeah.
Which is insane. And so one of the cool things I like is I like that there's sort of this underlying ecosystem where, you know, and this isn't a spoiler because this happens early on, you know, at one point when you're with the Brotherhood, you start seeing vertebrates doing hunts around you and to the point of almost being hilarious at times, because there's if you're walking in an area and there's two factions battling it out somewhere, you aren't actually influencing it. You're just watching from a distance, and you can choose to sit back and watch and then happily loot like I do. You can choose to be involved. You can, and then sometimes like the wackiest stuff will happen because things may or may not go right for either side, and you'll get these moments where, you know, the Deathclaw happens to punch a guy and he punches him so hard he goes into the freaking car park and it blows up four of the cars, and you're going, did that just happen? And it's stuff like that that actually made it even the humor, you know.
Yeah.
It almost added a level of humor. But it's that randomness that keeps me wanting to see what happens next, because you just never know what you're going to see.
You know, and that's something that you've played GTA 5, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, we actually talked about that last episode when I had Mash on here. But GTA 5 was my favorite game before Fallout 4.
Yeah.
And that had those random moments that where I kind of just stopped and took notice, like where the cops would just chase someone down and ran, you know, run them into a telephone pole. They'd get out and have a shootout, and then I would just go loot the bodies. And it's kind of the same thing where with this, you know, and it's like this evolution in gaming now that, you know, where there's more going on, where you don't really have to have more going on with other people like an MMO, but you can have more going on with AI against each other. And then just loot the bodies.
Well, I love that it just works and it just happens. I mean, you'll have moments that aren't scripted. It's kind of like those dragon moments in Skyrim where you get attacked by a dragon near the same place, but you and your friend will have a completely different experience, you know? And it'll be one where it's like, yeah, I was over here and a vertebrate attacked me and, oh, he got shot down. And yeah, well, guess what? Mine got shot down and half of it went flying into the distance and took out two super mutants who were completely unaware it was even happening. And then you're just sitting there going, what did that, what? You know, or, you know, the Brotherhood of Steel guy who opens up with a Gatling gun at this ghoul near a car park, ends up blowing the whole car park to kingdom come. And then because of the way that his AI worked, happened to look like he turned and looked at me like, sorry. It was so funny. It was just like he just stood there and went, sorry. And you could see my camera going, no. And you could just tell the guy was like, sorry about that, man. Sorry about that. Like, I've recorded a couple of these because some of them are so funny. But that's what I need to do is throw them together and, like, throw them on YouTube for people to just get a kick out of it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's funny moments of Fallout. But, I mean, that's the thing about this world is – they have made a world that is so detailed, and, you know, love the graphics or hate the graphics. Personally, I love it. I think it works just fine. You get too creative with the polygons, and it's going to start bogging things down. But what they're able to do is they got this nice balance of being able to see so much crap in the distance, and half of it you can't even see. But there'd be details to it, like you'd see things in the distance where the fact that when you first at nighttime saw that Corvega plant in the distance and you just stood there in awe because the lighting was real-time lighting, not your faked, you know, Fallout 3 lighting.
Yeah.
And you saw this glow and you're going, what is that? Or you'll see something out in the distance and go, what is it out there flickering? Or you'll see the laser beams going in, what is that? You know?
Yeah.
Right down to the actual glow you see in the distance out in, you know, by where the bombs fell, and you're seeing this constant, like, you know, almost like this glow in the distance from what they call the glowing sea. And it's, you're the whole time you're going, what is causing that? You know? And I love that they were able to portray these things, these little mini stories where, cause when I played Fallout 3, I got to that part with the Red Cross place. And I remember thinking, I want more of that. You know, the other stuff is fun, but I want more of the pre-war what happened stuff.
Yeah.
And this one, they just riddled it. I mean, you're seeing it from the point of view of so many different people. And some of the stories are so tragic, and you get this sense of loss that matches yours, even right down to, like, the people you meet where you might meet a ghoul who happened to be there before the pre-war stuff, and the moment the two of you together had this reminiscing moment of what the world was like.
I know what you're talking about.
It's just crazy, and it's all of this just lends itself so well to everything in Boston. I mean, it's such an interesting place because you've got that mishmash of immigration of different types, right down to the music being like merging that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty revolutionary game, which is a nice change after, New Vegas, you know, which was, like I said, you know, 3.5. It's refreshing to see how many new things, how many new ideas that they actually took from, not only from mods from Fallout 3, like, you know, there are some great ideas that were thrown in there from the mod community, and they kind of introduced a few of those.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of sad that some elements were removed. Like, I think that the companion wheel in Fallout 3 and New Vegas,
know.
I miss that.
That would have been awesome.
And I miss where you could repair your weapons with other weapons of the
with
same
other
type.
Weapons.
Yeah,
yes.
I miss that a lot.
Yeah, your weapons don't degrade in this one quite like that. And the other thing, too, is that I really liked is, and people will say, like, you know, one of the things that, and this would be a perfect place for me to mention this. So a lot of people, including myself, were wondering, okay, you know, I've been working on this mod for 3 years. You know, I'm getting to the end of it. I you know, here comes Fallout 4. Is this a bad thing? Did this prevent the people from wanting to play it? Is this going to be make me deter me at all? And one thing that I felt like really clicked with me that I appreciated was Fallout 4 carries the story forward, but I didn't feel like, okay, like with Skyrim, when you played Skyrim, you were never going to play Oblivion again. Oblivion was great, but it was shallow in places because Skyrim just took it so far forward. Oblivion looked like a joke.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like it took that Fallout 4 took away from Fallout New Vegas and Fallout 3. Yeah, it had better graphics. Yeah, it has settlements, but there are merits to 3 and 4, to 3 and New Vegas that still 4 hadn't touched. There's these underlying charms, like the exploration factor in 3 has a feel to it that 4 doesn't have, because it is primarily urban, and because it, you know, it's great what it does have, but it's a different feel. And the factional stuff in Fallout New Vegas, 4 did not touch that. Yeah. Four has cool factional stuff, but you have no idea. I hate the fact that you kind of don't know what you're doing. Am I messing this up? You know, it's like in Fallout New Vegas, if somebody did something wrong or you made a bad choice, it would say you've gained infamy. Yeah. I like that because in this one, I feel like, you know, oh crap, you know, I just talked to the railroad and they hate me for some reason and I don't know what I did. You know, I didn't, that spooks me a little bit, but I like to have more of a tangible version, but I still think that it just gave me more to go on. And as far as my mod goes, this is the part I'm pleased to say. Not only did it not deter me from doing my mod, what it did, and the reason I've been playing this game like no tomorrow, is it just immersed me in a ton more canon to pull from. Where before, part of what's taken so long with my mod is I had to reinvent a lot of detail that wasn't there because it just hadn't been. Because my mod has some elements to it where part of it was an experience to learn how to do this stuff, but I wanted to make more, like when you go to the grocery store, I wanted to make more funny food that would be on the counter, you know, stuff like that. And billboards, what would it be? What's cool is this game gave me not only more canon to pull from, but more companies to be aware of and places, things that are happening where I can go, oh, that merges perfectly with what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Where now I can have billboards. It might not be the same billboard because it's a different game and they kind of poo-poo that, but I can make my own that using companies that are in the new one. And what it did was spur ideas for interaction that maybe were just a little bit blah in places. Because this one, I mean, you know, Fallout 3, the interaction was sort of like hit or miss. It was fun, but you'd have those moments where it would kind of glitch out or something weird would happen, and felt like, you know, exploration was the main thing. But in this, you got a lot more back and forth talking, and so it gave me some more ideas, which is great, because it didn't make me want to stop doing my mod. It made me want to go back and okay, this is it. I got what I need to finish it, because I feel like it's filled that gap.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it gave me more to more research and kind of a, you know, it gave me more to pull from, because in the 3 years I've been working on this mod, I played some games, but I haven't played a ton, and it was like my brain just needed to like breathe, and to breathe in more Fallout was exactly what it needed.
Yeah.
Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, it does, and I think you brought up some really great points about how it didn't, you know, make Fallout 3 and New Vegas null and void. It didn't overwrite them.
Right.
Because it's in the same universe, it's in the same world, it's got a lot of the same mechanics, but it is a different game, you know, it's a different type of game. And actually, you know, when I got the bundle, the Xbox One bundle, it came with Fallout 3 also, and I have that on the PC, you know, I beat it several times just for the PC, so now I'm like, you know, I want to play that again. I want to play it on on a controller this time. And that game will always have a special place in our hearts, you know, because because of what it brought out, you know, it was kind of the turning point for a lot of the, you know, for a lot of the games that we see now, you know, mm-hmm. these Fallout games. But, yeah, it's totally, because you look at it now and you're like, I want to play Fallout 3 just because it's like a whole different game. You know?
Yeah, and it does. It has an ambience to it that you and I think we felt that when we got to New Vegas and we went, it's not that it's missing something. It gained something else. But what it, you know, there's this urban exploration of like the city and the country that Fallout 3 that they just nailed it. You just have this sense of exploration, and in Fallout New Vegas, what they nailed was that sense of that like Wild West desert with a whole much more fleshed out story. And then Fallout 4 is kind of like, let's take that to the next level. Let's build on to what we learned in Fallout 3, right down to having stories after stories that not only carry over from Fallout 3, but are completely linked from Fallout 3. Characters mentioned, people you meet, it'll take you a second to realize, wait a minute, I know that guy. And things like that, where all these details were met. But one thing I like about Fallout 4 is that they are able to give, like, the buildings are so much more fleshed out, where in Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas, you tended to see, let's say industrial, you would see the same cookie cutter building, done up a little differently, but it was the interior was the same thing. This one, they've gone buck wild with it, where you'll see a particular type of tile set designed for one building, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right down to what's inside it. I mean, the Corvega plant, you're already going, this is not what I thought I was going to see. And it's almost mind-boggling what they did. And then there, you know, then there's going to be cookie cutter places, but the sense of like detail, like, my God, they made all this just for that. And, but it's great. This is what we wanted.
Yeah.
There's not the cookie cutter feel quite as much.
And, you know, I feel that way about the characters too. You know, not only the companions, but just any NPC you find, you know, roaming around. I think like New Vegas was very linear, and it was very much where, you know, like you said, with the infamy, you know, you do this, you gain faction with this, you know, it's either Legion or, you know, and it's kind of like, you had to choose a side, you had to go this way, and you could, and it was fun for what it was because you could play the game again. Like I played it once and I went NCR and I played it again and I went Legion. And it was very cut and dry, you know, and you just wanted to see how it ended. But with this, it's a lot different. And I really like that. But one of the big things for me is I find myself, at first I was playing it like Fallout 3, where I would get a companion, and I'd be like, okay, I got this companion, check. Now I need to go do this quest, and then I need to go get the other companion, then I need, you know. But then I got to the point, I think it was right about when I got Piper, and I kind of stopped and said, you know what, I need to find out about her, like about her story, and about, because there's so much more complexity there in this companion than just doing her side quest and then going on to the next companion, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I didn't think I would, if I was playing Fallout 3 and you would have told me that in the next sequel that I would be spending more time with companions and learning, I would be like, no, that's not gonna,
that's true.
You know, but I think it makes you slow down and kind of, you know, smell the roses a little bit more. And because another thing, and this is not really a complaint of mine, but it's another stop for me, which I needed, was the difficulty of the game. I find myself going from quest to quest, which actually I think this happened in New Vegas a little bit too, where you get a new quest, so you're like, oh, gotta go to do that quest, and then you go there and it's guarded by 20 super mutants and
you die. Yeah, you're butt handed to it in seconds.
So you're like, oh, okay, well, let me just put that one on hold, back burner, and then I will try a different quest. And I think that this goes even further. I think Fallout 4 goes even further with that, because I tried doing that. I tried playing it like New Vegas in Fallout 3, where I would go to the next one, somebody would give me a quest, okay, let's go to that one, and I just get my butt handed to me, you know. Did you find that the difficulty was just completely ramped up, or is it just me?
You know, there is some truth to that. In fact, one thing I did like that they did was, and this is a good point to like touch on what I think they did right, extremely right, was I loved not only the fact that you could change the difficulty level, but what it also did was increase the ability of finding legendary enemies you could fight and the legendary gear that would drop. They sort of added that like Diablo style loot drop, which was just enough for me without breaking it and making it weird. Like I thought it added a little bit of a fun factor to it. Yeah. But the fact that one thing they did well with this too is like when you mentioned the difficulty, I felt like I was given some warning going in that, okay, you're about to go into an area where maybe this isn't a wise choice. Like, you know, not to put too fine a point or touch on any spoilers or anything, but I found areas where, let's say there would be like two Assaultrons guarding, and I'm like, okay, there's my red flag. Mm. That they gave me that, here's your warning. Where some places it felt like, you know, okay, no problem, you know. But there is a difficulty level. I mean, there is a couple places where I've had, like, even Rob, I remember he mentioned, yeah, there was one or two things where I had to kind of, he did it on like harder difficulty and he had to bump it down to normal. But I think I lucked out. I think I just happened to kind of, the settlement building levels you up so well that by the time I'd hit these areas, because I was playing with settlements so much, by the time I hit the areas, I was almost like too powerful in places.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But only because of the way I did it. But that's what's crazy is we all have very different experiences with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I guess that could lead into this negativity we were talking about. What kind of things did you find out there from reviewers and stuff that was really negative that you...
The most bizarre thing, and I gotta be honest, sometimes I gotta kind of tell people, like, come on, people, common sense. You know, I heard a lot of people going, my God, the spoilers are already leaking, and blah, blah, blah. Well, don't watch. Don't get on there and watch them. Come on. And you know, I heard some, even ones that were far-fetched, and one of them was, you know, and Rob, my buddy Rob, he isn't swayed by those very often. One of them he came to, I actually heard not only from him, but like two other people that were going, I don't want to play the game because somebody spoiled the story for me. And what they told me, the without getting into the ending, Sean, who you're looking for, is that this ending basically played out the idea that perhaps Codsworth had been linked and he was part of Codsworth, and it was that, and I won't go into detail because it was so stupidly far-fetched, but people were like already not wanting to play the game because that ending was ruined and it seemed hokey, and I'm going, guys, that's not it. That's not what happened. And it's like, oh, it's not? And I'm like, oh, come on! You mean that troll guy, that's all it took for you to decide not to play this?
Yeah.
Like, come on, people. And I think it's because people are so excited for this, and we've waited so long that people had already turned negative over the dumbest pieces. And it's like, well, the storyline was, I felt that the storyline was shallow. Oh my God, have you played a Bethesda game? Have you found a Bethesda game where the ending didn't make you go, what the? I'm like, do you remember what happened in the third one when things died at the end and it was over? And you, can you remember? And it's like, well, that one was a better game. And you freaked out then.
Yeah, it's like, here's a BioWare game. That is story. If you want story, yeah, go play BioWare.
Well, and there's elements where you can tell that they, I think one of the big gripes I heard, and some of it's founded and some of it's like, just relax and sit down and wait. And I think it was because, again, the training for the game, people were misunderstanding what was going on, and there were elements they could have explained better that people were getting frustrated and going, if that's how it's going to be, but they just didn't realize it was, things were there that weren't explained. One of them was the companions. You know, it would have been cooler to have seen companion, because they did the companion storyline similar to how BioWare does, where as things move on, you get more and more story. Well, that's great. I would love to have seen it fleshed out maybe even further. Obviously, it's hard to do within time constraints. But I've heard a lot of people go, that was the most worst part ever. And I'm going, give me a break. In Fallout 3 was way better. Give me a break. Did you seriously go to somebody in Fallout 3 and have them group with you? Because they were awesome. I mean, you did it because they were a means to an end.
Yeah.
A means to a storyline. You did not find yourself grouping with the Mr. Handy because he was hilarious. What's crazy about the companions and what shows it works in places is everybody has a different version of who's their favorite. Different varying reasons. I love Codsworth. Why? Because when he does talk, it's hysterical, and the rest of the time he shuts up. Why do I not like that? There's one in particular, his name is Strong, and I won't go any longer than that, because he doesn't shut up. You know, and it's like, there's characters that are hysterical, and there's characters that are a little more dark. You know, it's not all of them I've played, but it seemed like every one of them was entertaining in their own way, but what I liked was I felt a kinship with them. That I don't remember having in Fallout 3, like you said.
Yeah.
You did not group up and go, you know, I feel a vested interest in keeping you alive, other than Dog Meat when we all cried. But it, you know, even in this one, I almost was keeping Dog Meat in the doghouse, you know, back in Sanctuary because of the fact that, God bless him, he just got in my way, which was a little bit disappointing. I would like to see that fixed. But the other thing too is, you know, that I've heard, there's like little nitpicky things, the bad graphics. I don't agree with that. There's places where you can nitpick it. Oh, the terminals look the same. Oh my God. Really? The terminals, guys, look at the freaking, who cares what the terminals look like? You can freaking build guns. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you forgive the terminal? And for the record, I went into the NIF tools and looked, and it's not the same terminal. I'm sorry. But there are places where people were saying, I don't like the graphics. They look dumb. And I think that let's be honest, you know, the internet world, people are just so negative. Like, people just, not even trolls anymore. We've reached a level where people just love to hate things. And the more hype, the worse. But
yeah, that's true. I guess I can see, I don't see how anyone can complain about the atmospheric graphics, you know, the environment, things like that.
The ambience and the music are dead on.
Yeah, all that too, but I could see the character, you know, the character faces, but
yes,
when you,
there were some places.
Yeah, there's some places where I don't think I've found it just seems like the idea was cool to be able to stretch the faces and kind of, you know, do like character builders have been doing for the last 5 years anyway, you know, where you can make the face a lot more customized. But you still have that Bethesda hair.
Yeah.
It's still there.
You do. It's still the same Bethesda hair and Bethesda, you know, goofballish things where weird things will happen and their head will vanish and all you see is gigantic eyes and teeth and you're like, ah, you know, like Piper. Oh my God, you're a synth. Oh no, you're not. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I've looked past that. You know, I think that's, if you sit there and focus on that, you know, you're just, I don't know.
I didn't find, personally, I've had like people tell me how shallow the story was. And I'll tell you right now, I felt more immersed in the story being pre-war and going through this guy's story with him. And I don't even touch on spoilers, but let's just say I've beaten one of the faction endings already. And I, for one, loved every minute of it. But I will tell you that the thing you have to appreciate is that the central character of the story of the entire game, it's the world that's the character. It's, yeah, your character is in it, but the world itself is the focus of what's really going on here, and the story plays into that. And if you can just get over the fact that the story is, yeah, you're going to get to it, and you're going to go, it's not everything I thought it would be, because you finally played it, and you finally saw, and there's no more secrets, and the secrets you get are, your brain made 1,000 variations of what it could have been, and it's never going to be quite what your brain thought of, and even though you really didn't know what the hell you were thinking, you know, and that's the bummer of hype, is when there's a hype train and people are like, oh, that's the other thing, the hype train was out of control. God, they didn't even tell us about the game until 4 months before it came out, people. Come on. The one place I will say, like, the hype train got out of control was that Pip-Boy edition. My God, when the thing sells out in 24 hours. I did get mine, by the way.
Oh, okay, nice.
Did I? Okay, nice update here. So check this out. It dawns on me after the game comes out, I'm like, because after playing it, I really wanted this, because now I felt like I had a vested interest in wanting to have it. And so all of a sudden it dawns on me, wait a minute, some kid out there got this Pip-Boy edition, played with it for 2 seconds, got bored, and said, I wish I had my money back. And I'm like, so somebody out there on eBay is going to sell this Pip-Boy by itself with no game for cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
And sure enough, what I ended up getting, and it was one that hadn't been opened, like the guy, I guess, changed his mind. Once he realized the buttons didn't work the same as what he thought. And it's like, well, duh, it's an app. But so what he did was I ended up paying $10 less than I would have if I just bought the game. So I was like, oh, cool. So I get it on opening night because it's digital and I got the Pip-Boy. So, and what a hoot. The Pip-Boy is so fun.
Nice.
But yeah, it's, I love the world. I love the music that it's in. Yeah. I can't wait to get the art book. I love the overly dramatic, like the fact that skyscrapers and it would be overly done, and the fact that smokestacks in an industrial area would have a ring around them like something out of the Jetsons. I loved it. and the fact that the cars, you know, you'd have your little Mini and your coupe. And but real quick, I was going to touch on a couple things. Some things I'd like to see them maybe add in a future patch. And one of them was I'd like to see the whole miscellaneous quest thing seems a bit bizarre to me. One thing that makes me frustrated is when I'm in the middle of a firefight, and in the middle of the firefight, this little teeny box pops up and goes, oh, by the way, Sunshine Settlement Co-op just got attacked.
Yeah.
And you're like, you didn't see it because you're blowing this guy up. And then you don't notice it because you're in your quest thing, and it's at the very bottom in the miscellaneous, oh, by the way, while you're out getting cigarettes for this guy, these people may or may not be dying.
Yeah.
And so it's like, where's the okay box? I have to acknowledge it, you know?
Yeah, and it's really bad when you never saw that, but then it says, fail. You know, your settlement was attacked and you didn't defend it. It's like, what? Wait, what? I didn't know.
Like, I didn't even know I was getting attacked.
Yeah.
Well, I do like that you get there and you didn't really get anybody killed per se, but what you are doing is you're having to repair and make up for lost things. And sometimes people do get killed, but, or the fact that, thank God, the dang, caravan people are mortal, because, how far south have you made it in the game?
Let's see. I've made it to Diamond City.
Okay.
I guess that's the farthest south.
Further south. Because the further south you go, I mean, the more outrageously dangerous it gets. And where you start getting into the outlying swamps. Well, there's this one settlement down there that is in the middle of what's got to be like the worst hell area ever. And what's funny is, so I have a caravan lady go there. And the poor lady, you just see her with her little oxen happily heading north. And in within minutes, she must have got attacked by what had to be about 4 different factions of people. And it was so funny because I'd see Supermans go after her, and then she'd fight those. I'd come running to the rescue, and I'd shoot them. And then all of a sudden, you hear another scream and another thing. Oh, my God, now they're attacking her. And thank God, you know, she can't die. Again, I wish somebody had told me that, but or I wouldn't have run to the rescue. But one of the things that I wish somebody had told me was, you know, there's a certain point in the game where it does get a little bit irritating, because once Preston starts giving you these the settlement needs help quests, they start to get a little repetitive in places, almost to the point of being silly, where, you know, he'll say, I found a settlement that needs help. And you'll be like, oh, my God, where? And you'll be like, Sanctuary Hills, find them. And I'm like, dude, you're here. You know, and it's like, what are you talking about? And it's almost the point where the parts where you're trying to be constantly told to go help people and you're going, God, I'm in the middle of something. I can't help everybody.
Yeah.
And it's okay because eventually, you know, you start realizing, oh, okay, you know what? You miss it here and there. And really what's going to happen is their happiness might go down, but they'll live. Hmm. But there is a point in the story when it starts to ramp up and it's like, oh, maybe I wouldn't have gone buck wild. But then there's that other party that goes, yeah, but the settlements are what's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
That's half the fun right there.
Yeah, there is a lot they throw at you. That's definitely true. Well, I mean, I guess from here, I mean, we were going to talk about the DLC. So,
yeah.
I mean, where can they go from here? You know, where do you think that DLC is going to take us?
You know, I thought long and hard about this. And the reason I was because, okay, this, you know, you've seen this already in the game. They're able to portray so much more detail that they couldn't portray in Fallout 3. And it would be cool to see where they go, just because I remember that sheer awe of going from the DC wasteland to the pit. And I remember going, oh my God, it's like a whole different game. And you know, even in New Vegas, you'd find like these that you get in those outlying areas and, you know, in the DLC and you're like, oh, it's like a whole different game. And I can't wait to see what they do. But at the same time, I'm like, hey, it's got to be linked to Boston somehow or some way linked to that. And one thing I'd like to see is if somehow, because there's so much crossover from Fallout 3, maybe even see a part where maybe you go back to a location you got to see earlier. Maybe not all of it, but some of it. Where maybe you go back to a previous location, only now it's souped up. That would be cool. One of the rumors that's been flying, had you heard about this harpoon gun that supposedly
I heard
found?
Somebody found it, yeah.
Yeah, because there's an underlying story like where you find the sociological society and it's alluding that they're eco-terrorists. Not a lot of backstory, but you know, I've heard people go, that could be what one of them is. And at first I thought, you know, that'd be kind of cool. But then I thought, well, underwater would be kind of neat. But at the same time, it's post-apocalyptic. I mean, it'd have to be pretty good. But it's like, underwater is underwater, whether it's post-apocalyptic or not, you know. But except for the fish, it'd have four heads. But, you know, I'd like to see more of the pre-war stuff. Because they gave us that wonderful glimpse into the pre-war stuff at the very beginning, and it was so gorgeous, and all this artwork was created, and yet you never really saw much beyond that. And that's one place where, again, my mod, thank God, it shines, because I thought for sure they were stealing, like, oh my God, they're accidentally stealing my idea of all these flashback sequences, but they're not. It was stable, and so it'll work perfect. But I would like to see, give us more, you know, give us more of what the world was like before the war, and even if it's like the whole Anchorage simulation in Fallout 3 where you went through virtual reality and played it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something like that. Give us the memory den with more in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think you're right on spot here. I think that we will be surprised with what they come out because they do such a variety. I mean, look at the New Vegas DLC. You know, Old World Blues, Dead Money, Honest Heart. Lonesome Road was probably my favorite. Mm-hmm. Which one was the one with the robots? Was that Old World Blues?
That was Old World Blues.
Yeah, I didn't like that one as much.
Yeah, that one was a little different, for sure.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's like it's so different that it's a different game, like you said, but also it's to the point where you can actually not like playing Fallout, which to me is crazy, but that was one of the first times it was probably the first time where I just was like, I don't want to continue this DLC. This is just not fun.
It was a long one, and it had a different sense of humor, and it was definitely like, you kind of had to force your way through parts.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, like, laser guns, and it just wasn't, you know, post-apocalyptic. It wasn't like, you know, scrapping.
Robots making penis jokes. It just really goes down.
Yeah, it's a whole.
after the fifth one, I was like, who's writing this? Did Chris Avellone really write this? Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, even like you said, the Anchorage one was quite different because it was a simulation.
Yeah,
but I loved the environment. You know, it reminded me of like an old GoldenEye or something. You know, but I thought it was a lot of fun. But you can see, you know, even with the difference in the New Vegas DLC, that they probably either they kind of, you know, they let each writer from the team, like, write one, and then they see which one does the best. I don't know. But it's like, I kind of like that so that you can, you don't feel like you have to get them all, although I will anyway, but you don't feel like that it's all part of, you know, this one big thing that you have to get. Mm-hmm. They're all their own thing, you know, and if you like, which was it, honest, wait, I get them all confused now. Which one was the one with the, it was more like indigenous, it was in the desert, was that Lonesome Road?
Was it the
Road?
Zions Park one?
Yeah.
Because there was the Zions Park one with the tribal kids.
Yeah.
And then there was the one, Lonesome Road was, like all the freeway.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that reminded me of Fallout 3, that's right. Yeah, I like the other one, well, I like both of those, but it was just a, you know, it's one of those where you play it and you're like, this is incredible. I love this. And then you play Old World Blues and you're like, what's going on?
Yeah, you know? It is. It kind of broke you out of the kind of the world. You got backstory, but it was kind of a silly in places version of it.
Yeah. Which was the one with, see, now I have to keep asking all this. Which was the one where you were in, you had all the miasma and there were the guys with the glowing eyes.
That one ended up being, I have to admit, that one started out being the one I thought started the weakest and ended up being nearly my favorite once I finished it, because the storyline was so interesting and different and fit well with the Fallout lore that it almost like sold me on the story itself, with just the sheer, you know, tragedy of that story. That was Dead Money.
Yeah, Dead Money, that's right.
Yeah, the whole Sierra Madre, it was almost like the Sierra let's find Madre. The money in the vault, and what you got was like, oh my gosh, this is elaborate, you know?
Yeah, that was a crazy one.
That was one, yeah, and it had, you know, it had a weak beginning. I mean, getting everybody and trying to go in and recreate the sequence was kind of slow, but once you realize the full scope of what had happened, and you're going, oh my god, this is deep.
Yeah.
And see, that's what I'm hoping happens on this, because see, like one of the things that I can't wait to see what they do is, because one of my favorite DLCs, and it's funny because it really grew on me over time, especially when I went back and played it again, was Point Lookout. That one was the most unusual in my opinion, but it ended up selling me, because rather than try to be its own encompassing story, which it was, you had like four or five mini stories in this gigantic area that all played themselves out individually but still meshed in places.
Yeah.
And I loved that. One thing that I will say that, because I got two things on there that I predict we could see. One of them is more of a hope. The other one is, I think, kind of a smirking, I think we may see it just because of something that happens. But one of them is, let me do this without, because this won't be a spoiler, because my mentioning the name alone will intrigue you instead of spoil it for you. Do you remember in Fallout 3, the Dunwich Borer Company? The Dunwich Towers, you end up going in there, and the towers is where everybody starts going insane.
Yes.
And it goes very Cthulhu. In fact, when you get to Point Lookout, you later get the other half of what happened and find the object that they were after that you later can bring back, and you know, and it keeps the Cthulhu stuff going. Well, there is a location in Fallout 4 where the Dunwich Borer Company, turns out that they were based out of Boston. Or maybe they were based out of D.C. and they happened to be doing stuff in Boston. And so once I saw their name pop up, I thought, oh. And what I'd love to see is, because you have like these very key locations. Have you been to Salem yet?
No, not yet.
Yeah, there's stuff in Salem that I would love to see more of. I mean, I would love to see like more of the whole Dunwich Borer thing played out even further than it even did, and have there be almost this. I mean, let's face it; it's New England. We're kind of toying with the paranormal in places. Let's have a Cthulhu style story, something out of the Secret Worlds level, where you've got the island that everything went to crap. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's get some of that in there. But there's one thing that happens, and half of you out there are knowing where I'm going. There's a certain random event that happens in Fallout 4 that will allude to something that happened in Fallout 3. And I think, I can't imagine that they would have done this and put the time into the artwork for this and had that not be for one sequence, that's it. It had to have been a precursor to something that may or may not be coming in DLC. And if it is, it'll be curious to see how it plays out, because it's interesting. You know, you see these constant things in Fallout 3, then see in Fallout 4, and in some places you're awed by the changes. Like, oh my god, look at how it looks in Fallout 4. It looks so much better. Like the diners. You know, you'll see the diner, like, my god, look at it. And then But it's cool to kind of see what does it look like updated. This would be one of those where the DLC would do. You'll know what I'm talking about. The minute you see this happen, you're going to go, oh, that was it, you know. I don't think it's completely random. I think that everybody in some form eventually will see this, but that we'll talk more later because that's as far as I dare go. But without being a spoiler, but it will be cool to see what they do. Now, one thing I'm going to say, shame on Bethesda, is I get that they want to stay quiet. For the love of God, if you want to sell season passes, you have to give us something.
Yeah, tease a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's Christmas time. You just sold 13 million copies. For the love of God, give it. You know how many of us will buy the thing tomorrow if you tell us? Give us one piece of the puzzle. And let's say you have four stories coming out. Here's the first one. This is the hint. Okay, yeah. Fine. We will now buy the pass. You can't stay quiet and do nothing. I guess we did get sort of a segment. Did you catch that one? There was one magazine who interviewed Todd Howard, and Todd Howard is known for not saying anything. He alluded that part of the reason that they had not completely announced the DLC was because they were watching what people had done with the settlements. And this was a given. The settlements have to be expanded.
Yeah.
It has to. The two light bulbs is not, it's like, what the hell happened there? You give me 400 of these things, but you gave me two light bulbs? In the modding community went nuts with that. They added so much stuff. But one of the things that needs to be done, Hearthfire, I almost said Hearthstone, that was weird. Hearthfire was one of the coolest things Skyrim did, and you could tell this built on that. But they really need to make the settlements, like, it needs its own DLC.
Yeah, yeah.
Call it a settlements expanded, if you will. Give us all the stuff for the settlement management behind the scenes. At least let us know what's going on. And give us 500 more things we can build with. We'll love you forever.
See, I really think that they are going to monetize settlements a little bit more. There's going to be things you can buy. I mean, they're already doing that with, you know, I mean, when you play Fallout Shelter, they monetize the Mr. Handy's,
yeah,
and then the lunchboxes.
And then dog meat now.
Yeah, and now they have dogs and cats, and it's like
living together.
It's anarchy. I mean, it's just but I think that's kind of I hate monetization, but it's a necessary evil. And I think that this would be a good place for them to do it, because people will buy the heck out of little things to put in their settlements, you know, to either help or even just be cosmetic, you know. So I think that would be something. And if that's a DLC, well, if it's a DLC, it would be different than monetizing it, you know.
Yeah, that's what I think they'll do. I think that in the case of Fallout Shelter, they had to sort of find some compensation for a free game somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't break the game for you. You don't have to have it. In fact, I've never bought the lunchbox. I've just had fun playing with the ones I get, and it works fine. In this, if they went out of their way to ask for extra beyond the season pass, that would be cold.
Yeah, yeah, beyond the season pass would definitely be cold, yeah.
And they've definitely gone nuts with the marketing. My God, one thing I have to say that I'm thrilled about is that they finally are just releasing thing after thing that's Fallout related, almost to the point of being like, guys, stop. Like, we only have so much money in our paychecks. Like, you know, it's like...
It's like if Disney bought them and they started...
Only all the objects? Every time you see them, you're already going, I already know this is going to be over $100. And it is. It's like, well, pocket watch? What in the hell? What am I going to do with it? Yeah, I'll buy it. And it's like the bobbleheads. I jumped right on that.
Oh,
the bobbleheads. As soon as I got, I'm like, woohoo, you know. And then the, little things here and there, like the jogging jacket. I'm like, oh my God, I so have to run a marathon just to have post the picture of me with the Vault 111 jacket, because that is freaking awesome. And then, you know, like, they've just gone bonkers with it, almost to the point of being, like, embarrassing in places. But at the same time, you know, you'd buy it if you could.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. Just keep that going. But I'm like, the next thing they need to do is, I want the full size. And I've had to make my own because, you know, I work at a, you know, for a copier place that has wide format. So I've actually been printing out gigantic posters of my own stuff for the wall, but I'm like, where's the gigantic, you know, poster of the garage? You know what I mean? Like, I want freaking 8-foot wall poster that covers everything perfectly. And
so you could put it in on the walls of your own garage.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So I want it to look like that garage.
Yeah.
You know, and my dog, you know, I mean, dog meat jokes are flying in my house, even my kids, because my kids like are old enough now, you know, my daughter's almost 12, my son's almost 10. So they're just in the middle of it, and they're, you know, it's funny that I've raised them with Fallout lore because my son knows the backstory. Oh, look, there's a atomic General Atomics. Isn't that the people that made Mr. Handy? There's a high five and a hug for that one, buddy. And that's what's so cool is he's dying to play this. I can't really let him have at it yet because it's still, you know, ultra violent. I'm like, especially the bloody mess perk. God, I love that. But but it's cool to see them having fun with me and going, he got the Pip-Boy edition here. Let me wear it. And you're like, no way in hell are you going to wear that. And, you know, but especially with the app though, that was hilarious. The idea of having an app that links with the game, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Pip-Boy or no.
Yeah, they did a good job with that, that's for sure.
They did. I implore everybody, if you haven't already, the soundtrack, I usually don't say stuff like this, the soundtrack's available on iTunes and everything else. Like, the soundtrack, that Eon Zero soundtrack, is beautifully done. The one thing I will say, that, and this will be my final little, like, gripe, did you catch that there appeared to be something behind the scenes that switched up with, that there was originally the guy who did Three Dog's voice was going to be in the game, and he had tweeted it, and then somehow somebody figured out, wait a minute, he's not in it. And then he tweeted again that he's sad he's not in the cut, that he would be happy to work with them in the future. And the impression everybody got was he shouldn't have tweeted.
Yeah.
And that maybe something got cut, which is, that's true. That's tragic. But, one thing I will say, I freaking think Travis, the DJ Travis, is hilarious as hell.
Oh yeah.
But it is repetitive in places, and it's because, you know, there's, you know, another element to Travis, but I thought that part was great, and the music they added was great. But one thing I will say that kind of, again, little Pat, you know, was the kind of, that's nice, is when you hear our radio station, the amount of work that me and Sean put into this. I mean, when you listen to Travis, you'll hear variations, probably about 5 or 6 variations on things he'll say, depending what he's talking about. With me and Sean, there's like hundreds of variations. Like, there's not only hundreds of variations, it goes about 8 levels deep between commercials. And when you get to the commercial, it's not even the same set of commercials. There's more than one set. And it's so cool to hear it and go, ours is still cooler, you know, which is nice.
Yeah.
But I will say, listening to Travis come apart is so entertaining. When he starts screaming about things, and like, what? Where's my stuff moving? And he just like, okay, I'm good. Or that part when he was like talking about that song Rocket 69, and he couldn't even say it because he was like, I can't. Yeah. I was dying. I'm like, I love this guy.
And I like that you can actually become involved with Travis's storyline really early on in the game.
You know, I want a bumper sticker. You know, this isn't a spoiler because it's so random, but I want a bumper sticker that says, like, I liked Nervous Traps better or something like that, instead of, like, you know, like save confident Travis or something like that.
Yeah.
You know? But because everybody's like, I liked him when he was nervous. But I will say that guy's interactions, even though I've heard it like 5 or 6 times, I'm still laughing at the parts when he would, you know, when he's like, can't figure out the chick's name is Skeeter Davis, and he can't figure out why it's a chick named Skeeter, and he can't even, like, Skeeter, you know, he's like, he just hates it, and I'm like, that is good. I do love him.
Yeah.
But
and it's all those little things like that just make this game so incredible.
It's ingeniously done, and it gets a lot of crap, but I think that, you know, what they've given us far, far outweighs things. And the one gripe I've heard people say too is that, you know, it's, well, they said it was the most bug-free release they've ever had. I think it might be. I mean, in New Vegas, the doctor's head spun like he was on The Exorcist. To me, that's embarrassing. That didn't happen in this city.
The most bug-free release that Bethesda's ever had is still not even close to bug-free.
That's it. It might not be completely bug-free, but it's definitely a lot better than the next one up. And it's like, you know, I think you always tell what the veterans are, because they go, have you played Daggerfall? Because, wow. Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. But, it'll be, you know, they definitely need to get cracking on the patches faster, though. The whole patching process is like, really, guys? What are you doing?
Yeah.
But, you know, nothing like having a day one patch that simply adds more keys. Like, what? About the part when I talked to the lady and she all of a sudden jumped back to her first thing she said and the quest went haywire, but oh well.
Yeah.
Anyways, but yeah, you know, we just wanted to touch on that, talk about some of our, you know, what we did like, and you know, we'll be touching on it here and there. I'm sure we'll be hearing hopefully soon about some DLC.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be a Through the Aftermath show without a mention of Fallout 4. So I'm sure we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, I know. Now it's like you know, hashtag so good. I mean,
yeah, it's a thing. Yeah.
It's a real thing now, and it's we got to keep going with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think we like I said, we didn't want to rehash all the same stuff that everybody's talking about. We just kind of want to touch on some things and talk about what we liked. Let me ask you this real quick, and this will be my final question for you: is there anything in particular that you think was one of the coolest moments?
Coolest moments?
Yeah, something in the game that you think was the moment, like, oh, I'm going to remember that. Like, almost like the cool moment that you're like, something you saw, maybe an Easter egg you ran into, you went, that's freaking cool.
Well, I mean, spoiler free?
You know, I'll leave that in your court, because, I mean, some of it, I think that there's so much in this game that when you hear about Easter eggs that people might run into, it's kind of hard to not. It's kind of like, it's a spoiler, but it's kind of not, because there's no guarantee you're ever going to see it. Yeah. There's so much of it. But,
well,
yeah, maybe.
I think I could do that spoiler free, because I think that this doesn't even have anything to do with the storyline, because I think that in the settlements themselves, the first time I realized that you can scrap everything, and I even emailed you about this, I was like, you can scrap everything. And to me, that was, I mean, Bethesda games have junk. That's another, you know, that should be a t-shirt or something.
Yeah.
But that's a thing. It's a thing that happens. And it's always been kind of this joke. And it's just this, you know, this inside joke with people who love Bethesda games. And they figured out something to do beyond the junk, jet. You know, they figured out something to do with this junk. And that is to make it the most, you know, the most precious thing in the world. So
right.
you go back. And you, places you've already cleared out, you go back and you make sure you got every little coffee cup and cigarette, you know, so that you can make something for your settlement. But when you first get the settlement, and you first get your workshop and you first get, you know, you open up your workshop menu and you're moving around and you see things that are highlighted in yellow, highlighted in green, and you click X on the Xbox One, you know, and it scraps it. And then from there you get, like, you know, steel or wood or whatever. And when I figured that out, and it's like you said, you know, there's no hand holding at the beginning. You have to figure all this stuff out. So I think that actually, going back to that, I'm actually happier that I had to figure it out myself, because it's a lot more of a, you know, oh, that's really cool.
It was like a, can I really freaking do this? Oh my God, this changes everything moment.
And it's not only that, it's like, okay, I can scrap the stuff in my inventory. Cool. Like, I kind of already knew that I could do that, because people were talking about it before it launched. So I'm like, okay, you know, I can't wait to scrap that stuff in my inventory. It's going to be cool. And then you move the mouse around and there's a sign and you scrap that and you get steel from it. And you're like, oh, well, and then there's a shelf. And then there's a tire, and then, so you're scrapping everything, cause you're like, I don't need any of this stuff, I'll just, you know, I'm gonna scrap everything. So, when I get a new settlement, at first I used to keep a lot of the stuff there for kind of like, you know, oh, that would look cool there, that old car would look cool, but now I'm like, no, it's 12 steel, you know?
Yeah, now scrapping. It's a resource, yeah.
Yeah, and so, when you get to that point where you kind of figure out that, or for me, I guess, when I got to that point where I figured out that you scrap everything, and then you can move anything around, you can make your settlement just how you want it. You can scrap, like in the first settlement, you can scrap houses, basically entire houses that are not ones that you interact with, but just, you know, ruined houses is what they're called.
Mm-hmm.
You can scrap the entire thing, you get tons of stuff from it. And to me, that was really a turning point for how I wanted to play the game, you know, how I understood the game, how I wanted to set goals in the game, because it went from, I can't wait to play, you know, to the end of the story, to I can't wait to make this settlement have a windmill and lights and, you know what I mean? It's like, and a laser turret, you know, like I can't wait to do this stuff and upgrade the people. Like when I leave a settlement and I come back and the people are walking around with like shotguns and, you know, scrap armor on, I'm like, I'm so proud of you.
Well, that's it. What it does is it adds a level of metagame that, let's be honest, not only is it fun, but it adds on to the curse of I blew through the content in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that, God bless them, World of Warcraft, they, you know, perfect example, they just never seem to grasp that fairly recently. And it's like, you know, how many of us have played an MMO where we spent majority of the time not questing, doing the story, but we've been playing with the house. Mm-hmm. And here you are where, I mean, I can tell you, I'm well over 100 hours. I mean, I've probably put more time into this game in the short time I've had it than I did in Fallout New Vegas. Mm. Because I'm just not going through and doing the story. I'm spending hours playing with the house stuff and like, oh, I've got to build this up. And okay, this new location has rocky terrain. I'm not going to be able to do the same idea, but I'm going to have to come up with something new.
Yeah.
And you just find this insane amount of time being dumped into it. And you're going, I'm having fun. It's 100 hours and I'm still having fun.
Yeah.
And you can't say that about most games.
Yeah, exactly. It's, yeah, for that long. Well, what about you? What was your wow moment?
You know what? It's for me, I think the biggest wow moments have been places where I'll see a location and go, oh my gosh, this is where I'm going to get more. Like when I saw the Corvega plant, I'm like, my God, that's exactly what a factory should look like. But I think for me, it was seeing locations they had never really touched on. Because one of the things in my mod that I did, and I apologize, I keep referring to my mod, but I mean, it's because you have to understand that a lot of what I've been savoring in the game and waiting to see was stuff where I've touched on in my mod because that's what the kind of stuff I want to see. And then here they go and do it. One of the things in my mod that I did is I tried to make it where you get to see up close a lot of what happened in places where the bombs did hit. And it right down to one of them that missed and hit somewhere it shouldn't have. Hmm. And what I loved is that first moment. And this is spoiler free because you know it's out there. There's an area out there where the bombs fell called the Glowing Sea. And I think for me, it was the sense of awe that comes with it. And I won't even describe it because I want everybody to experience for themselves. But it's this, what they did was they nailed the art direction of what would this area where a nuke hit full blast have looked like if it was a town earlier, what would it look like now? And it's almost like horrific in places to the point where I'm almost sad I didn't get to see, like, I would have loved to have had there be tons of the game just there. But it's integral to the story, but it would be a thing where it was so interesting to just be like, this is it. This is where the bombs hit. But the only thing is though, this is spoiler free as well. I would love to have known why the bombs hit there. Cause I kind of compared it to the real map in Boston and their similarities, but I'm like, what the hell were they aiming at? Like, why did the bomb go off there? You know? But I mean, it's cool because you do get some backstory of what happened if you're looking around at some of the coastal locations. But I love the fact that you finally got to see full bore, okay, this is where the bombs hit. Look how horrific it can look. And then you also see these other areas where, these places where there's cars and these overpasses where you're going, this is how I've always pictured it. And up until now, my brain and my imagination had to fill in the gaps because, you know, we played Fallout, we played, you know, oh, what would the world of the 50s look like? And we haven't really got to see it in all its wonderful, perfect glory until now. And so when you see the downtown areas, even right very early on, you see the overpasses, you're going, that's exactly how I pictured it would be. Mm-hmm. Here's your creepy thought for the day too. Cause so there's been at least four places in the game where I've looked. So when I designed my mod, I did the mod based on what I thought the 50s thing version of something would look like. It's really scary. We're on four different places on models. I went, honey, come here. And then she came in. I said, look at this in the game. Yeah. Now look at the one I modeled by hand myself. What the hell is this? And my wife's like, it's like the same model. What the hell? Like there was places where I was making detailed things for the game and then they had it. And I'm going, oh my God, I think I should be proud of myself because I was right on. But at the same time, thanks a lot.
Did you check your house for cameras?
Oh my God. I was like, yeah, my wife is even joking. Like, she's like, well, were they stealing from you? I'm like, they may have been because there's a couple of models where I'm going, that's too creepy. And when you see the model, I'll show you where the coincidence was. But, I just loved the sense of, when you in Fallout 3, when you left the vault and you were like, oh, everything out there is amazing. In this one, it was a little less so because you didn't see as much.
Yeah.
But I think it dawned on me just when I got to the Corvega plant and saw the interiors and I realized, oh my God, this is not the cookie cutter world anymore.
Yeah.
This is definitely every area I'm going to visit is going to have something different. And it does. I love the addition of the comic books in the
oh yeah
the books you find and the bobbleheads and the fact that you can't frack up and blow one up by accident and not realize it till later. But No, it's good. It's good though. Yeah. I can't say enough happy about it. I'm still playing it, so that's something. So
yeah.
But anyways, yeah, I think yeah, we'll just see what the DLC says. That hopefully even before the new year, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, it's we have quite a lot in store for us. You know, how long Fallout 3 was 2008.
Yeah, and, it took 7 years.
Yeah, we're getting so much out of that still, you know, and yeah. So we have a long road ahead of us.
And the mods haven't even come out yet. I mean, some of them have that are sort of, it's amazing what people have done even before they had the tools. Like, if those of you who are PC gamers, definitely check out the one called, I think it's called True Storms. Oh my gosh, it changes the weather system to what it should have been, in my opinion. But I've heard, you know, the sound replacements, I've heard funny things where people have made it so that the generators don't roar in your ear anymore. Ones where the dog meets feet don't sound like thumping cows anymore. You know, ones that are almost hysterical, like when you do a critical shot, instead of doing that blip noise, it goes garbage day, you know, and I'm like, okay, that never gets old. I've got to do that. But yeah, it's definitely check out the Nexus modding community. I mean, it's already exploded right down to the boob jokes. I don't know. That's not my thing, but hey, more power to you. Yeah, it's modding it for everyone, you know. But yeah, it'll be cool that they finally let the consoles be part of that. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'm excited for that. That's actually the only reason I've always bought it on PC first was for mods, and now this is the first one I bought on a console first, and I don't feel like I'm missing anything, you know.
And you probably won't. And before anybody asks, no, I probably won't do my mod for Fallout 4. It's just too much work to put the world together. But now the radio, I that's easily done, because the radio really is the work of the radio is just recording the stuff, putting it all together, and then telling it what it is. That part's easy. I can do that in a heartbeat. That might happen.
Oh, cool.
Hopefully, I'm not sure what the limitations of the console would be. You know, it really would come down to how much space, because these sound files are, you know, bigger, but. I could see that happening, because, in my opinion, the radio could have been better.
Yeah.
And ours would be a perfect addition to that. But
we'll see. That would be cool.
It wouldn't be hard, but cool. We'll see what happens. But now John will bow, because I feel bad. I like dominated like this episode. I guess it makes up for the fact that I wasn't here in the last one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine with me.
Yeah. I know. Poor Sean is 2 hours ahead of me, and I'd like to say that it's probably almost midnight for him.
Yeah, that's all right. I usually am up to about one, so.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's before somebody accuses me of not having a life when they look at my Steam profile of how much hours are in Fallout 4. I don't sleep, so I guarantee you, please know I'm not, you know, neglecting my family much. They're usually there with me, like, laughing at the same stuff, but, you know, it happens.
Yeah. Yeah, in this episode, we're actually recording this a week before we're going to release it.
Yes.
So, I mean, in the next week, you know, Star Wars is going to release, and there might be a DLC. You know, it's just all kinds of stuff's going to happen. So
I know. It's been off the charts crazy with everything lately, and, you know, hey, we live in a world where Mad Max is nominated for a Golden Globe. Life is good.
Isn't it four of them?
It might even be four of them now. Like, it's funny. Well, we also live in a world where The Martian gets nominated for Best Comedy. I don't know what that was. I was like, what the hell was that? I'm like, what? You know, I was like, is that like the part? It's like watching I Am Legend get nominated for Best Comedy, because he was like, no, eat the vegetables. Don't be playing. I mean, it was like, wait, what? But yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and cut this one off. This is like a double episode.
It really was. We were making up for lost time, I guess.
Yeah.
It's almost like that part where John just goes, fall. Okay, I'm better now. You know, that was it.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm sure we'll talk about it again. We have to have a show, though, a non-game related show coming up pretty soon.
I know. We're about there. We need to, and this is Sean's homework assignment. I'm going to make this public.
Oh.
I started watching The Strain.
Oh, okay.
If you get a chance, and it might be on Vudu still free, the first episode. If you get a chance, it's post-apocalyptic in its own right. But if you get a chance, check that out, because that might be one we talk about soon.
Okay.
There's actually a couple of them that have been out that have intrigued me that are post-apocalyptic, but that one is a different blend of it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll check that out.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Awesome. All right, yeah. If you want to get in touch with us, you can check us out on Facebook. That's where we usually talk the most. You can also email ttaftermath@gmail.com and check out throughtheaftermath.com, which is our website where I'll put up the, you know, the show notes for each one, but I also just recently started putting a little player. I mean, welcome to the year 2000, right? I mean, So I've started putting a little player in each show note so you can play it straight from the website. You don't have to download. You don't have to subscribe on iTunes, although we don't want to stop you from doing that. You know, you can still do that. But it's just easier. You know, if you want to just go to throughtheaftermath.com, click play, listen to it right there.
Are we still on iTunes? You know what's funny? I actually checked, and I'm like, are we not on iTunes anymore? Did something glitch?
Oh, did it? I don't know. It's something. Actually, Brent helps with that feed.
Oh, if people out there have not and realized we didn't know this, I don't think we knew this until now. I picked it up the other day. I was like, wait a minute, where are we? Oh, it sounds like dog meat is attacking my family. That's classic. I don't know if you can hear that. yes, Lassie. No, I do have the mini nuke. If it did disappear off iTunes, we apologize. I wasn't paying attention myself, and I just went, wait, are we not out there? Like, we better fix that. We'll see what's involved.
Oh, yeah, I'll check that out. I didn't even know, but yeah, I'll check that out.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
But yeah, so that should be easier, you know, and especially now if we're not on iTunes anymore, you can just listen straight from the website. So, I think this is our last episode of 2015.
Yes,
and
indeed.
You know, what's funny is in January, let me check this out, because I think it will be 6 years
or
oh my 7.
Heavens.
7 years.
It's 7 years because, yeah, we were talking to Pete Hines right after Fallout 3 came out. Oh, my heavens.
Let me check this out. Yeah, I'm looking on the page right now. January 30th, 2009 was our first episode. So 7 years next month.
7 years. It doesn't seem like it's even been that long.
That's crazy.
And that's not even including you're doing Guildcast and the Online Gamers Anthology, which now I am embarrassed because I'm like, God, I know those were lost episodes, but holy hell.
Yeah, actually, I just realized last month in November, it was 10 years since I started doing Guildcast.
Oh my gosh, and I still remember listening to that.
10 years.
Oh man. Guild Wars has changed a lot over the years too.
Yeah.
Oh, we're already to expansion number 2. Oh god. One on the new one, but oof.
Yeah. Whew. So while we reminisce about the old days.
Yeah.
When it didn't hurt to get up and we had more hair. Well, you have more hair anyway, so.
Yeah, mine just is turning colors. But it's only because of the mod, I think, you know? That's it. sounds like we'll see you in 2016 at this point. All you loyal listeners who've been with us so long.
Yeah. Yeah, we thank you, definitely.
Absolutely.
I think that's it from us. So check out the website, check out Facebook. Email us if you have something you want, something's on your mind. Actually, we have some emails that we need to read one of these days that are a couple months old. Maybe we'll do that next time. But
yeah, we'll do that.
But so that's it from us. So from all of us here at Through the Aftermath, I'm Sean.
And I'm Jonathan saying, stay alive out there, keep calm, and Fallout 4. Keep calm and Fallout 4. That was awful. What was that? I don't even know why I just said that. Like, we're so tired.